everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 51 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Keep Your Eye on the Trump, about my conversation with Jerry Hagstrom, a 40-year veteran of the agricultural beat in Washington, D.C. Hagstrom spoke November 9, 2017, at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held at the Grand Hotel in Spokane. I've known Hagstrom for 30 years. Back in the day, we were both reporters covering U.S. Wheat Associates meetings. He was the urbane, clean-shaven, suit-wearing journalist. I was the raw, bearded, jeans-wearing reporter. I was pleased when Hagstrom was recognized for his pursuit of the Australian Wheat Board's deceit during the Oil for Food program, which ran from 1995 to 2003 and allowed Iraq to buy food and medicine in exchange for oil. Hagstrom's reporting revealed the Wheat Board paid Saddam Hussein millions of dollars in bribes so that Iraq would buy Australian wheat. I believe his revelations led directly to the dismantling of the Australian Wheat Board. Unlike me, Hagstrom is a verifiable farm boy. He grew up on a wheat farm outside of Bismarck, North Dakota. His Washington, D.C. newsletter, The Hagstrom Report, which has a subscription price of $1,200 a year, is the inside and out of agricultural policy without political axe grinding. Or put another way, he calls them like he sees them. I mention these items because I want to stress that Hagstrom's comments about President Trump and the Trump administration are not the knee-jerk reaction of a liberal Washington, D.C. journalist. He understands that agriculture's embrace of Trump helped him win the election, but he cautions farmers that their support requires due diligence. They must, he said, scrutinize Trump's policies closely and judge what they may mean for farming and rural America. During his convention remarks, Hagstrom spoke about the three issues wheat farmers need to keep their eyes on. The Farm Bill is on the list, but not the priority, given that it won't even be brought to the floor of the House until sometime in 2018, and there is unlikely to be major changes. The tax overhaul definitely deserves close attention. Hagstrom said farmers could wind up paying more in taxes now by way of getting rid of the estate tax on the other end. His biggest fear, however, is that Trump will end the North American Free Trade Agreement, referred to as NAFTA. Here's what he said during his convention speech.
The other and most difficult issue facing farmers and ranchers is the North American Free Trade Agreement negotiations. The Washington lobbyists and members of Congress are increasingly fearful that President Trump will decide to withdraw from NAFTA. Yesterday, even Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said he is working on a contingency plan in case Trump withdraws. I've been watching this debate very closely, and I think they're right. The problem is the Trump administration seems almost totally focused on manufacturing and on righting wrongs rather than appreciating the accomplishments of NAFTA. They put forward proposals to allow Florida tomato growers to use anti-dumping and countervailing duties against imports from Mexico and to make Canada abandon its supply management system for dairy. Both Mexico and Canada say these proposals are non-starters. At a recent news conference, Robert Lighthizer, the trade representative, said he believes that if NAFTA ends, this is a quote, all three countries would do just fine because there are a lot of reasons to trade. But last week, Gordon Stoner, the NOG president, pointed out that Mexico is the most important wheat market for U.S. wheat and said it would be a disaster if we withdraw from NAFTA because, the tariffs would go up. But your lobbyists are facing a problem right now, and that is the fear that farmers will not get motivated on either tax reform or on NAFTA. Now, when I say your lobbyists, I'm not speaking of anyone in this room. In particular, I'm saying all lobbyists. The fear is that the farmers like Trump so much that they will pay attention to what he tweets rather than analyzing the situation. But I'm here today to say to you, no matter how much you like Donald Trump, you need to pay attention to these issues and be active on them. I find the NAFTA situation particularly problematic because it is so hard to influence this administration. They don't seem to listen to members of Congress. The only thing that I can say is if you were active on the Trump campaign or you know people who were, please get the message to them or get it to the White House yourself that staying in NAFTA is really important to wheat growers.
I caught up with Hagstrom a day after his speech. Finding a quiet place to conduct an interview during a convention is a bit of a task. We finally adjourned to his room, where he was packing up to return to the other Washington. As someone who began covering agriculture during the Carter administration, and that includes the administrations of Reagan, Bush Sr., Clinton, Bush Jr., and the Obama administrations, I asked Hagstrom whether he had ever witnessed a time of similar tumult in the nation's capital.
No, this election of Donald Trump is the biggest change I've ever seen in my career because he's an outlier. He's outside of the political norms. We've never had a president who would come in and withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Who would say some of the things that he has said? What's so interesting about this, of course, is that he was barely elected. He didn't get the majority of the popular vote, and really he was elected because of dissatisfaction in the old manufacturing and rural areas of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio and Michigan. So the election could very easily have gone the opposite way. And this past week, when we had the election in Virginia, we saw that it could go the opposite way. The Democrats could really bounce back in the next few years. So it's very chaotic. But the big difference that I see here is this sort of split in the country between the way that people in some areas see the world and in others. It's the rural-urban divide and the regional divides. And I think it's very unfortunate that it has become so dramatic.
Now, we've all heard of the story that when Trump was thinking about withdrawing from NAFTA, that Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, went into the Oval Office with a map and showed him whose ox would be gored if NAFTA was rejected. Trump turned on a dime, and that was not the case. I mean, isn't that still in play? I mean, it was agriculture that really played a large role in electing Trump.
The lobbyists that I interview in Washington, who meet with people in the administration, fear that no longer is the case. This administration is so focused on manufacturing, and they are very, very upset and unhappy about the U.S.-Mexico manufacturing relationship. They think Mexico has gained an unfair advantage, and they really want a deal to bring more manufacturing jobs back to the United States. Now, that's unlikely, but that's what they want. And now the fear is that rather than taking an attitude of do no harm, with agriculture, the attitude is, we'll do no harm if we can get a deal. But if we can't get a deal, we'll withdraw.
You have been doing this work for more than 40 years. What do you think would happen?
Well, first of all, NAFTA had a dramatic impact on both U.S. and Mexican agriculture. We've had dramatic increases in exports to Mexico of the products in which we have great strength, such as wheat, corn, soybeans, and so we will. Those tariffs on those products would go up. I can't give you specific numbers on each of the products, but there were tariffs in place, and they would be reimposed. At the same time, Mexico has been exporting an enormous amount of avocados to the United States, and those tariffs would be reimposed, and so that business would be endangered. So I think that's what would happen. Now, the Mexicans are probably not going to want to give up all of the imports that they have had. They certainly have become dependent on our corn, but
They've already said, you know, we're going to explore other suppliers. And they have been talking to the Brazilians and talking to the Argentines. Now, in terms of Washington State, the biggest danger in the withdrawal would probably be for the apple industry, because the Mexican apple producers already are unhappy about the apple imports. They say that they've been hurt by the apple imports from Washington State, and so they'd probably be thrilled with higher tariffs on U.S. apples, but it would be very bad for the apple industry here.
So trade is essential to agriculture. Agriculture helped elect President Trump. Trump has a problematic relationship with trade. Is agriculture shooting itself in the foot?
That's a hard question to answer, because I think that farm voters voted for Trump most of all because they objected to the high level of environmental regulation. They were particularly objecting to this proposed Waters of the United States rule. Now, that rule had gone into effect technically, but it was never really being implemented because it had been blocked in the courts. So we never really saw the impact of this. The rural voters, the farmers, were voting on the fear that WOTUS would mean that the Environmental Protection Agency or the state agriculture and environment agencies would be coming onto their land and looking for evidence that pollution was flowing into waters that, for example, are only flow a certain period of the year, that maybe are dry the rest of the year. And the fear of this really motivated them to support Trump. Now, I think that a lot of rural and farm voters unwisely ignored what Trump was saying about trade. They thought he wouldn't withdraw from TPP. They thought he would keep NAFTA. But now we're seeing that Trump really does stick to his campaign promises. And this administration sees its core support among those disaffected manufacturing workers that voted for it in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, that delivered the election for Trump, and they want to do something for them. And if that means getting rid of NAFTA, so be it.
Let's say NAFTA isn't rejected. Is it already having reverberations just because of the rhetoric?
Well, from what everybody tells me, it already is. And the strongest evidence, of course, is that the Mexicans have been exploring purchases from Brazil and Argentina. There's also the issue that was raised here by your state agriculture commissioner, Mr. Sanderson, that he believes that it may be turning off consumers in those countries. They would turn against American products. And that is another factor that has to be considered. Also, the trade lobbyists in Washington say that the repercussions of the president's rhetoric on NAFTA go beyond these countries and to the potential for trade agreements with other countries. There's a fear that the United States just wouldn't be a reliable partner, or that it's going to want everything one way. And the thing about trade is it has to be trade. If you're going to have a trade agreement, you're going to have to accept products from the other country as well.
Washington, D.C. is a much more cosmopolitan place than Spokane, Washington. You have an opportunity to talk to people from around the world. You also travel. How is the Trump administration perceived by those around the world?
I would say certainly among the elites around the world, people are perplexed. They don't like Donald Trump. But I would also make the point that the Western European countries and the United States are basically facing the same problem, which is the unhappiness of the white working class in the current globalization. If anyone in the United Kingdom says anything negative to me about Trump, I would say, well, your people voted for Brexit. Donald Trump, if he lasts 8 years, will be out in 8 years. Brexit is forever. In Germany, The recent election showed the rise of a party that is opposed to immigration. In France, the more liberal candidate won, but still the unhappiness is there behind lower down in the society. So I think all the European countries are facing the same problem that we are. I do think the political elites did let down the white working class, the people, the manufacturing workers. We've had a decline in manufacturing as it has moved to lower wage countries, and it is an issue that all these countries are going to have to deal with.
So let's shift a little bit here now and look at the farm bill. What do you think are going to be the major policy issues addressed in the farm bill?
I actually don't think there are going to be any major issues addressed in the farm bill. I think that the structure of the farm bill satisfies the ag community to a great degree, but there are going to be some issues that people want to have addressed. The cotton industry is not happy with their program. They want a new program. The dairy industry wants a more generous margin protection program. And the grains industry wants some better fairness on this county ARC program, in which, because of the way the farmers report things, the price reporting may be much higher in one county than in another county, and therefore what the farmers get in one county varies compared with what they get in another county. The thing about all of those things is that they cost money. And there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of money around unless they find some creative way to find it. Still, the biggest issue in the farm bill is whether the food stamp program, formerly called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, remains in the farm bill, because it's vital in order to get the urban and suburban members to vote for it. The reason is that if you're in a city or a suburb, you have no stake in the direct stake in the farm bill, except for that program which feeds low-income people.
No major policy changes, but isn't crop insurance? Isn't that on the table? And Senator Flake just came out with a bill that would limit crop insurance. What can you tell me about crop insurance?
Well, each time there's a farm bill, there's a proposal to cut crop insurance one way or another. So Senator Flake has introduced a bill in which the what they call the harvest price option, which means that the farmers can take out a policy based on the price at harvest as opposed to the price in the spring. He says that shouldn't be subsidized. It's like a gift to the farmers rather than a real insurance program. And so he would like to eliminate those subsidies. There may be a battle over that. I doubt that he will succeed, because he hasn't succeeded in the past. But we'll have to see. There are real threats to the crop insurance, no question about that. But the farm lobby has stood very strongly behind crop insurance. They make it the number one priority ahead of everything else.
You and I are old lions, Jerry. We're on the end of our careers rather than the beginning or the middle. I'm just curious whether you have any insight about the millennial generation and how the millennials might change the whole game.
Well, first of all, Scott, I don't understand why you're bringing up our age when these people can't see us. We could be 20-somethings, and then people would be more interested in what we have to say. But in terms of the millennials, they are buying differently and shopping differently than people of older generations. I particularly rely on the research of a group called the Hartman Group in Seattle, which does a lot of research on millennial purchases. And what this research shows is that millennials are buying fewer packaged goods. They buy less cereal and other things in the center of the store, and they They buy more stuff on what's called the periphery of the store, which means that they buy lots of fruits and vegetables. They will buy bread if it's made in the store because they like the smell of the bread. And you know, they buy the meat, they buy the eggs, they buy yogurt rather than milk to drink. And so these trends are very, very important. Now, of course, the people I have just described have to be the millennials who have more money. But the research shows that the lower income millennials learn about these foods, and also they learn healthier eating habits because of social media. If you're a lower income millennial, you probably know millennials who are higher income, and you're in connection with them on Facebook and on social media, or you've learned it in school. And so the term that's used to describe the people who can't afford the higher quality food are aspirational shoppers. And Walmart has seen this, and so they started putting in an organic line. Whoever would have thought you'd buy organic food at Walmart? But the millennial shoppers are, you know, they're becoming the largest single group in the country, exceeding the baby boomers in numbers. So they are very important. There are a couple of oddities about the millennials. They don't want to spend a lot of time cooking. So they buy things that they can prepare quickly. They like fresh food, but they would want something that they could prepare quickly, that they could grill, that they could fry or whatever. But they're not going to be making a roast. It's quick preparation, lots of salads, but things that you can fix when you get home. What troubles me is when I go to conferences and I see people making fun of the millennials. And I don't think anybody, farmers, grocers, anybody should make fun of the millennials because they are the customers. And I believe for anybody in agriculture or food who makes fun of millennials, there is only one thing to do, and that's to retire.
Hagstrom and I both agree that retirement is overrated. So you won't find either one of us making fun of millennials anytime soon. For the record, millennials are individuals anywhere between the ages of 21 and 37. Listening to Hagstrom talk about President Trump reminded me of what President Reagan said during negotiations with the Soviet Union over nuclear weapons. Trust but verify. In this case, just because farmers believe they have a champion in the White House doesn't mean they should ignore how his policy pronouncements will affect life on the farm. That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 51, or what I'm calling Keep Your Eye on the Trump, about my conversation with Jerry Hagstrom, award-winning agricultural journalist based in Washington, D.C., who spoke at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held in Spokane in November. Please join me again next time for another episode of We Know About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our glue, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.